Part 3. Globalization, the wellspring of global economic growth. We've just been through the most serious financial and economic crisis since the integrated global economy began to emerge in the early 1990s. In earlier eras, even though international trade has inevitably suffered any time a major national economy weakened, recessions have been primarily national or regional in nature. But in 2008, we saw the world's financial markets fall with amazing speed, triggered by a panic that started in the United States. Many were surprised because it was widely believed that high-growth emerging markets would cushion the global slowdown caused by the developed economies. However, as the Great Recession unfolded, the emerging economies suffered from declining trade, shrinking capital flows, and slumping commodity prices, just as the trend's editors predicted. And more recently, creditor nations like China have been hit hard by this year's EU-centered debt crisis. As a result, the widely held theory of economic decoupling has ended up shot full of holes. A generation ago, this was unheard of. During the Cold War, the economic and political world order was characterized by a static tension between two superpowers, the United States and the Soviet Union. This ended with the collapse of the Soviet Union in 1991 and opened the world to the dynamic and interacting forces of a free market. Widespread changes in policy encouraged free trade, while competition paved the way for a more efficient and robustly growing economy. This opened the door to the possibility that free market capitalism could spread to any willing nation, bringing with it a higher standard of living, education, better health care, and all the benefits that have been enjoyed in the developed Western world. The model for this type of economy and the benefits that it confers on nations that embrace it is the American way of life. America has provided the model for the rest of the world to follow, because American products have proven to be the ones that people across the globe want. The key technologies enabling and accelerating globalization are computerization, miniaturization, digitization, satellite communications, fiber optics, and the Internet. Those are all tied together under the integrating influence of the World Wide Web, while competitiveness is defined by speed. Speed defines the winners in commerce, travel, communications, and innovation. And the speed with which companies can innovate defines whether or not their products are disruptive enough to become sustainable winners on a global scale. A perfect example of this is digital photography. When it first came on the scene, digital cameras were not very good. This allowed makers of film and traditional cameras, such as Kodak and Polaroid, to ignore the trend to their peril. Their customers were people who cared about the quality of the image. But a much larger market was embracing the ease of use of digital cameras, which in turn were being powered by the spread of photos on the web. As digital photography improved, the incumbent companies were too far behind to catch up. Kodak and Polaroid were marginalized. Thus, in order to compete in the new global environment, winning companies have to innovate at lightning speed to disrupt the incumbents, even if they are the incumbent leaders. This is the process that Joseph Schumpeter referred to as creative destruction. For nations to sustain themselves in the global economy, they will have to get out of the way and let the force of free market capitalism do the work of creative destruction. That means doing away with inefficient industries and jobs while letting newer, more competitive products, services, and methods spread and grow. In that environment, top-down government control won't work, because you can't legislate innovation. The same goes for protectionism. Protectionism means stagnation. The pace and impact of globalization have increased exponentially due to the telecommunications bandwidth explosion, the falling cost of transportation, the shift from a manufacturing economy to a knowledge economy, and the freeing of knowledge and of new ideas by the Internet and always-on mobile communications. These trends mean that anyone can work on anything from anywhere in real time. The result is the emergence of the global village, predicted by Alvin Toffler and Marshall McLuhan more than 3 decades ago. At the same time, the 19th century equation relating raw materials and knowledge has been inverted. A century ago, products contained small amounts of knowledge applied to large amounts of material, as is the case when a car is produced out of steel. Today, a vast amount of knowledge is embodied in a very small amount of material, such as when a new drug, a synthetic life form, or a microprocessor enters the market. And unlike automobiles, which can take months to ship across the sea, the knowledge in those tiny products can travel around the globe in seconds. This makes for both opportunities and perils. Countries that embrace these trends can flourish, while countries that attempt to resist will stagnate. All nations can learn lessons from the way various nations were able to weather the Great Recession. Anyone can profit in the best of times. It is the worst of times that defines the true winners and losers. Given this trend toward globalization, we offer the following 5 forecasts. First, while protectionism will continue the brief comeback that began around 2008, this will merely slow the steady progress of globalization. The Great Recession has made protectionism politically expedient for the first time in nearly 3 decades. We examined this trend in more detail in the November 2009 issue. However, the genie of globalization is already out of the bottle. Free trade is now a much more powerful force than at any time in world history. And more significantly, capitalist-style free markets are now more deeply rooted into more nations than ever before. As a result, we have passed the crucial tipping point of global market integration. Going forward, only those economies that embrace free trade and competition will thrive and realize a better standard of living, along with an increase in global influence. Those that try to resist these forces will be marginalized. Second, globalization will permit the world's economies to compensate for imbalances in skills, capital, and consumption between nations. Business models that optimize comparative advantage will become the big winners. For example, American IT companies are rehiring former employees who are willing to go to foreign countries to train local professionals. American universities train the premier scientists from around the world, and a very large percentage of them remain here to do their research. Ships designed in the United States and manufactured in Japan are integrated into products in China to be sold in Europe. Excess saving in East Asia and Europe will flow to India and the United States. And increasingly, U.S.-headquartered multinationals will coordinate and optimize all these functions. Third, smart investors will continue to exercise caution in emerging markets. The opportunities are big, but so are the risks as nations mature. Emerging markets are always more subject to external shocks and are not as resilient as established markets, such as the U.S. and the European Union. They can be destabilized by corruption, war, natural disaster, and other forces. Transparency is often practically non-existent, so only insiders know what's really happening. Bold investors may accept those risks in the hope of earning exceptional rewards, but caution is advised for the faint of heart. Fourth, globalization will change the nature of education. Nations that wish to tap the power of the free market will have to embrace the underlying forces driving it: communication, transportation, and knowledge work. This means developing a young population that is educated in science, math, and technology to form the basis for innovation and therefore wealth and status in the world marketplace. The imbalance of wealth in the world is dramatic. The richest nations are 400 times richer than the poorest. But through education, poor nations can jump on the globalization and free trade bandwagon and begin to catch up to richer countries. Nations that fight the trend will wallow in poverty. And fifth, information technology will supercharge the transition from a 19th century model to a globalized model. Any business in any country can now hire a virtual workforce, employing people anywhere in the world in its efforts to innovate in a free market. That same technology will allow entrepreneurs worldwide to find the cheapest materials, the best markets for products, and an ever-increasing marketplace of ideas. Nations and businesses that embrace these technologies will be the big winners. Others will fall by the wayside.